Hello, this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 12th of Sivan. Today we're going to see a response from Moshe Feinstein. It's about exhuming and cremating a body for reburial. This is from Shit Igrot Moshe Yerodea, the fourth volume, fourth time he approaches the Yerodea issue, Simon and Nun Vav. It's the date of the 12th of Sivan of Tuf Shin Mem Aleph of 5741, meaning 1981. And the question is about somebody who was buried in Russia. So this is 1981. It's a time when the Iron Curtain was still closed. For those of you too young to know what that means, there was a time when communist Russia was unwilling to let people immigrate, leave Russia, because they worried that people would just all go and take whatever they could with them and flee, because it was not a great place to live, even though they thought they were living the communist dream. They could not allow that, or they felt they could not allow that, whatever their reasons were. You know, could be, you know, for whatever side of the issues you're on, you'll have different perspectives. But from a Jewish perspective, there were many Jews who were unable to leave, and it was an issue, and you had prisoners of conscience, and Natan Sharansky, and people were put in jail, and they lost their livelihoods, and they suffered a great deal. There were all sorts of terrible, terrible things going on in the 60s and 70s in the Soviet Union. So you had somebody, a family, that they had a relative who was buried there in Russia, and he was buried in an ordinary grave, because in communist Russia, they didn't have Jewish cemeteries. They didn't allow Jewish cemeteries. It was part of communism, in the way that they thought that they wanted to express it was that everybody had to be equal and the same, and they wanted to basically stamp out religion. That was part of the reason for the persecutions of Jews in Russia. So the Soviets didn't allow there to be a Jewish cemetery. And after a while, the family got its right to leave. They got an exit visa, and they were going to America. They didn't want to leave their relative. Now, in the course of the tshuva, Moshe Feinstein isn't quite clear as to whether this was a parent or just some other relative. There was a relative who was buried there. They didn't want to leave the relative buried there among non-Jews. This is the way they were thinking. But the Soviet government wasn't willing to let them exhume the body and move it, meaning one option would be to exhume the body, find the coffin, whatever's left of it, find the bones, basically whatever's left of it, after how much it decomposed, put it in some material to transport it safely, and rebury it in America. That would have been an option, except the Soviet government was willing to let that happen. And this is the kind of thing you can easily imagine the Soviet government saying, no, that's a safety issue, that's a health issue, whatever it is. So they did not want to abandon, meaning, if you think about Eastern Europe today, there are many, many Jews, great Jews even, you know, great Rabbanim, who are buried there in Eastern Europe. There are people who make trips to go see their graves and things like that. And there was a little while back, there was somebody who was trying to raise money to keep some cemetery being well kept up, like in Lithuania or in Vilna or somewhere. There's this one lone heroic Jew who was staying there, trying to keep it up. So that's a whole set of questions that you have. So in this particular family, they didn't want to abandon their relative, just be there buried among non-Jews in a non-Jewish country. And they couldn't move the body itself because the government wouldn't let. So they exhumed the body, cremated it, meaning burnt it, or however you cremate a body, burned it to ashes, and they brought the ashes with them to America. And now they want to bury the ashes in a Jewish cemetery. And the question is, are they allowed to bury the ashes in a Jewish cemetery? So the first questions are, should they have burned the body at all? Should they have cremated the body? Should they have left the body? Now that they have the ashes, can they bury the ashes? So Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that the ashes of a person who has been burnt, and this is for whatever reason, meaning these people have burnt the ashes, cremated the body on purpose because they thought it was better for the person who passed away. But of course, at the end of World War II, you had many, many people who had been cremated for terrible reasons because the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, their memory should be wiped away, had cremated, killed people, and then cremated them. So those ashes, Moshe Feinstein says, there are lots of things you might or might not do with them, but they're not required, he holds, there's not required to be buried, because the obligation to bury a person who has passed away only applies when shlado kayemet, when the form of the body is still around. And the Moshe Feinstein points us to nidoch of zayin mebet, that's only the time that it creates tumah, that it creates ritual impurity. And Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that if it doesn't create ritual impurity, then there's no obligation to bury it. I'm not clear that that's true. I think there are some other sources that are interesting, so I don't always bring in other sources, but here I'm going to allow myself to bring in a couple of other sources. The Rambam there, which I believe Rav Moshe Feinstein had pointed us towards, the Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Meis, in the laws of the ritual impurity that comes with contact with somebody with the deceased. So Hamech Nisraf Ushlado Kayem, it says, if somebody passed away and the form of the body is still there, and he tells you what Shlado means, Hu Hashidra V'Hat Shlaot, if it's the spine and the rib cage, so that's the center, the center of the body, that's the form of the body. That creates regular ritual impurity, like as if the body was a complete body. So if it was singed at some points, that's not going to affect the tumma, the ritual impurity created by contact with the deceased. Avalim nisraf, says the Rambam, but if it was burnt until the point that you can't tell the form of the body that was once there, meaning the spine and the ribcage aren't there anymore, so then sadly, there is no ritual impurity there. It's not a situation that you want, and it's not like saying you shouldn't care about treating with respect the remains, but in terms of ritual impurity, the laws of Tumah and Tahara, there is no ritual impurity here. So back to Moshe Feinstein. Now he says, Arayda Balavaki, Eino Nechshav Meit. Moshe Feinstein says that means that it's not considered to be a corpse, a deceased body, that we have to treat that way. Now that's, to me, not an obvious conclusion. So I looked at a little bit of research, and I don't generally do research in these things, but this was an interesting topic that I thought maybe we could bear a little bit of research. So I apologize if you don't like that I'm sticking in my two cents. If you look in the Aruch HaShulchan in Yeridea, Shin Ayin Dalet, Seif Chet, chapter 374, paragraph 8, he says, "A no nikra meit mitzvah." Let's remember, a meit mitzvah is somebody who's passed away, and there's nobody there's going to bury the person. So that's called a meit mitzvah. And if a Jew encounters a meit mitzvah, they're required to bury the Jew, that person. Even a kohen gadol, even a high priest, who ordinarily is not allowed to get tamei, basically for anybody, not allowed to become ritually impure to help bury anybody, even close relatives. But a meit mitzvah is different, and a meit mitzvah will lead us to not involve, to stop everything else we're doing, to get involved with the Meit Mitzvah. There's all sorts of issues with the Meit Mitzvah. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, that's the Meit Mitzvah, sheyitame lo, elim kein mitzao rosho v'ribo. The only time you have to stop for a Meit Mitzvah is if you found the head and the majority of the body, o shidra v'gulgolet, or the spine and the skull, I think it means, v'im matzah. Then if you find it and you buried it, and then you forgot there were some body parts that were off the main part of the body already, and you forgot to include them, then you'll go back and include them, and you're back to become mitame. Now remember, the question being mitame for mitzvah primarily applies to a kohen. Ordinarily, a kohen is not allowed to get tame for the deceased, other than regular kohanim, get tame for, or allow themselves to become ritually impure, or required to become ritually impure to help in the burial of close relatives, of parents, spouses, siblings, or children, but not other people except for a meit mitzvah. So the Aruch HaShulchan is reading, I think, this whole halacha as a question of what is considered a meit enough. Now, Moshe Feinstein seems to have read it as that it creates tumma. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to be focusing on it more as a question of when is it that the body is still there enough that even a kohen will be required to be involved in burying it. And then once that's true, of going back and burying even body parts that ordinarily wouldn't produce that reaction. And the Aruch HaShulchan says it's possible that you go back to rebury parts that were forgotten even after a while, meaning you might have thought it's only in the act. Once I'm already involved in the Meit Mitzvah, while I'm still involved in that old one big burial, then I go back. But for the Aruch HaShulchan says he thinks it's possible, and I'm walking by, I'm a Kohen, I'm not a Kohen. But let's say for the sake of the example, Joe Kohen is walking by a Meit Mitzvah, there's a body in the middle of the field, nobody's around, there's nobody there, it's his job to bury the person. So he starts burying the person, and he buries as much as he thinks. And the person has been, you know, sadly, whatever it is. You know, you don't want to get too graphic. So let's suppose that 2 days later, he comes back, just feels bad about what happens. He comes back just to view the scene of the thing, and he's not planning on getting tummy. And he notices that some body part had been forgotten, however it happened. So the Aruch HaShulchan says it could be that even then, since he was the one who had the obligation to bury this person, that obligation continues, and that he would continue. And that would make it even more stringent than a close relative. Because in a close relative, the Aruch HaShulchan points out, person only gets tameh, only is allowed to, a kohen is only allowed to become tameh, required to become tameh, to bury the close relative. The close relative is whole. So then, he says, as I showed you in the previous sima, if you look at the previous chapter, he says that in the Nazir, the Gemara Nazir, Mem Gilman Bet says that if parts of the close relative's body have been cut off, let's say a head was cut off, so you don't become tummy. Why not? Because the Pasuk in Parashat Emor says, La'aviv ulimo, and the Gemara Nazir understands from the word La'aviv, Bizman shehu shalem, when the body is whole, when the body is complete. And therefore, that's why a kohen is not allowed to become tummy for an aver menachai. Let's say a the pair of relatives, body part comes off. Ordinarily, body parts that come off, we're required to bury them. So you might have thought if the Kohen is obligated to become Tamei for the person when they pass away, then when a particular body part falls off or comes off or is amputated, same obligation would apply. So the answer is it's not true because the obligation applies to a whole person and not parts of the person. Now he does that. There are those who hold that all of that is only means to exempt him from being involved in body parts that come off during their lifetime, the body parts themselves, and also if after passing body parts come off, right? Then he get many body parts come off, then you might not have to bury the relative. Let's say you have a relative, a Kohen has a relative who, you know, in the course of the end of his life had a leg amputated. So you think you don't bury the whole, the Kohen is not obligated to bury the whole person. So there are those who hold that, no, that's not what we mean. That if during the course of his life body parts were taken off, what's left is the person and his relative. And because that is the person, that is the relative, then that person will get the burial. And then there are those who say, no, it's not true because it's considered a chaser, but the Ramah thought it was lechol hachmir, I think, meaning not to. In any case, I brought all those Aruch HaShulchan to show that it seems to me the Aruch HaShulchan understood the whole discussion as being about what constitutes wholeness for the purpose not of burial in general, but of burial where there's reasons not to bury the person, where it's a Kohen dealing with a mitzvah, with a complete non-relative, or a Kohen even dealing with relative. That's where we get into questions of wholeness and not wholeness. But Moshe Feinstein, and I'm just pointing out that that's what it seems to me the Aruch HaShulchan meant to understood it to be. Moshe Feinstein is not understanding it that way, and he has perfect qualifications to take his own position. I'm not questioning him. I'm pointing out that there seem to be other ways to see it. So Moshe Feinstein seems to be thinking that when the body's not whole in that sense, has already gone beyond the level of being considered a body, not only is it a question for a Kohen becoming tummy for it, having to be involved in burying it, in general, he's saying he doesn't think that there's an obligation of burial. Whether that's true, you know, the extreme version of it that Rav Moshe Feinstein gave was that once shlodo is not kayemet, once it's not the basic form of the body is no longer there, it's all gone and you don't have to worry about it anymore. So even if you don't want to go that far, in our case, we're talking about somebody who was completely cremated. So clearly, that would be a person whose body's not around. Rav Moshe Feinstein's position is that such a person, there is no actual halachic obligation to bury the ashes. But let's suppose somebody wants to because they see it as an honor to the memory of the deceased. He doesn't think we stop them. Now, why wouldn't he think we stop them? Because you don't stop because there's nothing wrong with it. Because what are you burying? You're not burying like a body. You're burying something that halakhically isn't a body. So why is there? What's the reason to stop it? And he says, "V'gamu lahu davar tov lasot." Might even be a good idea. Why would it be a good idea? It would be a good idea because I think he thinks it's a good idea because demonstrating respect for those who have passed away is a good idea. And however it happens, certainly, if you think about after the Holocaust, if we came across the ashes, I think I've seen it together, we've seen it together, I think a long time ago, there are so many of these chivot, I just don't remember which ones were where, but that we've seen a chivot about whether the soap made by the Nazis, which the rumor was were made from the ashes of Jews, need to be buried. There's a whole discussion about that. So this issue would come up there, although there, I think people think that they never made soap out of it because it's very difficult to make soap out of the human ashes, but whatever it is. Kol Shekein, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, back in our tshuva, which is not about that situation, so we don't have to get into it, thank God, again, because it's a very sad discussion. Here, it's their father. Right, if it's their father, then chayavin mikvodo, they owe him honor. And then he says, "Me'achar deha alma choshvin kvurat ha'ifra lechavod, ulay nasem mitzvah lehabanim mimela." Maybe because while halachically we hold that burying ashes is not a necessary idea, and the ashes do not constitute the deceased, and therefore there's no obligation to bury the ashes, but since the world thinks that burying the ashes of a parent is an act of filial piety, is an act of honor for the parent, then it might be that it's actually halachically an obligation to them as well. The inyan kibud av, the definition of honoring our parents, ulayhu chiyuv gam b'mashe hechshivu hechshivo ha'alma lechavot. Maybe what the world thinks of as honor for a parent, that might be obligatory as well. That's an interesting category he doesn't expand upon, but he says it as a real possibility that maybe while there's halachic definition of honoring our parents, you look at halacha about the definition of kibbutz avaim, you have to, if they can't feed themselves, you have to feed them, if they can't dress themselves, you have to dress them, etc. If they can't get out, you have to help them get out. Those are halachic definitions of kibbutz avayim, but Rav Moshe Feinstein is suggesting that those are not the sum total of the obligation, and that anything the world thinks of as honor for a parent becomes obligatory upon Jews as well, which I think is true in some halachic areas, and it's in sort of category of its own, where we think of what halacha defines something as not being the definition, we think of it as the minimal definition, but that anything, and he's talking about non-Jews here, anything the world thinks of as fitting into this mitzvah, we would have to include it as well. So that's an interesting category to think about. Now, that's only true if they don't think of something that's prohibited as being an act of honor. Sometimes it happens that the world at large thinks of something we think of as bad, and they think of it as good. Another broad category to think about, where the world around you thinks something is not just, meaning it's one challenge when, let's say, I think, and because I'm Jewish, not because I thought of my own, I think it's good for Jews from sundown on Friday till Motzei Shabbos to observe Shabbat, and the world doesn't care about it. So that's one kind of a situation. I think it because Hashem told it to me, and therefore I do it. So then Rav Moshe Feinstein just said, so there are things where the world thinks it's good, and halacha is neutral about it, then I have to adopt it. But then he points out there are sometimes the things that the world thinks of as good, and halacha tells us are not only not good, or not only does the halacha not assert them as important or valuable or necessary to do, halacha prohibits them. So then obviously we're not allowed to do them. And that's a whole, so that comes up a lot of times, because then Jews, caring observant Jews, have to grapple with how they understand the world outside. Sometimes the world outside takes up something and Rav Moshe Feinstein is implying to us, and we would say, oh, for all that halacha didn't tell us, that's good. That would be like in most kibbutz situations. The world says, if your parents sadly became cremated into ashes, it's good to bury the ashes. It's a sign of respect. Halacha didn't tell us the problem. Yeah, we adopt that. Now, there are other areas of halacha where even the world thinks it's good. If halacha didn't tell us, we don't think it's part of it at all. That would be a thing. But sometimes the world says it's good, and we're supposed to recognize that it's prohibited, and then we can't do it at all. Now, in our case, I'm not going to get to other examples of that, but I think that's a very nice encapsulation of many of the challenges that come with interpreting the outside world. You can be an extremist and say everything the outside world thinks is bad. You can be an extremist the other way and think that everything the outside world says is good. And Rav Moshe Feinstein is pointing out, well, you can have actually three different kinds of things. There are things the outside world says are good, but it's not part of halacha, and therefore we're not supposed to do it because halacha didn't tell us to do it, and it's not part of halacha. So if the world thought that it's good on your Sabbath day to do X, and it's not a part of halacha, it's not clear at all that we should be doing that. There are other areas where the world thinks it's good, and we should be doing it, even though halacha didn't say it, like kibbutz avayim, like honoring our parents in the way that the world thinks is good, as long as it's not prohibited. But once it's prohibited, then it becomes bad, and we're not allowed to do it. Hard set of categories. In our case, since there's no problem with burying ashes, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, there's no prohibition, then if the world thinks that it's good to honor your parents that way, then you should do it. Okay, now, where it can get a little complicated is that what about, it might be the people who are buried near this person, where they're going to buy a burial plot in the cemetery, and they're going to bury the ashes, and they're going to put a matzeva, they're going to put a headstone there, is what I assume is going to happen. People that are buried nearby might say, we don't want to be buried near this person. Why would they say they don't want to bury this person? Because they don't like it, because it's cremated ashes, and that's not a Jewish thing. Now, we're going to get to whether they should have cremated the person or not, but once it's done, it's done. But you can imagine, not the people who are buried nearby, but the families of the people who are buried nearby, they can complain, or the families of the people, or the people who have bought plots nearby, and I may have estimated at the end of their hopefully long lives, they're planning to be buried there, they don't want to be buried near the ashes of somebody. And Rav Moshe says, and he says they don't have the right to complain about it, even if these are the ashes of an actual Russian, an actual evildoer, right? Because you could bury those near ordinary people. So this reminds us, Rav Moshe Feinstein reminds us, that there is a principle in halacha. I'm not sure that it's so observed today, because it can get very, very tense very quickly. There is a principle in halacha that we don't bury an evildoer near a righteous person. Just to quote you in Aruch HaShulchan, this is not to differ from Rav Moshe, it's to support what Rav Moshe said, Ve'en kovim l'shel tzaddik. You don't bury somebody who qualifies as an evildoer near somebody who qualifies as righteous. And the truth is, Allah is, you don't even bury somebody who's a minor evildoer, who does some relatively minor things wrong, near somebody who's a major evildoer, and all the more so, somebody who's not known to be an evildoer, as an ordinary person, all the more so next to somebody who's known to be a very righteous person. You don't do that. Nir HaShulchan feels the need to say, but you do bury a Baal Tshuva near a tzaddik gomor, meaning you might have thought, and by Baal Tshuva today, we mean somebody else than what they mean. He might have meant somebody who's like a Baal Tshuva, like at the very end of their lives, they changed their ways. So for 60 years, they were halachically problematic, and for 10 years, they were good. So we today are also thrilled about Baal Tshuva. We take it for granted. But the Rosh Hashanah is saying it's not so clear. It happens to be true. We would bury Baal Tshuva near even a very righteous person. But we make gradations within. And we get that from the fact that the Gemara talks about the fact that if you have people who were put to death by Beit Din, so they were so evil that they committed a capital crime and they managed to do it in the way that Beit Din puts them to death, which is not so simple to do, that there are different categories of the people. And the people who were put to death in one of the lower levels of Mitat Beit Din, if they got Hereg or Chenek, if they got put to death by the sword or by being strangled to death, those people would not be buried near people who got skila or srefa, who got burned to death or stoned to death, because the burning and stoning people are much worse than them. So you see that halakha makes gradations in terms of where you bury people. So you might have thought here, so Rav Moshe Veit says you don't have to even think about the gradations. Even if the gradations were a problem, the ashes are not thought of as that person at all. And therefore, they're not thought of that person at all, then you can't get, you don't get into this whole issue. And all the more so, Rav Moshe, if he was an ordinarily pretty good person, just they happened to have cremated him, which the halacha is you shouldn't have cremated him. Now, where it does get to be a problem is, let's say the relatives of, or the people who have already purchased plots near where you're planning on burying these ashes, says, you know, the relatives of this person who was cremated, the cremated person, Rav Moshe finds it saying they don't have the ability to complain about because the ashes aren't the person in any way, and therefore it doesn't get to that issue. That's a claim of its own, but that's just a claim that he made. Right? He doesn't think that the body qualifies as a body, and therefore they don't have the right to worry about it. But if you say the Russian relatives are not the kinds of people that you want to be buried near, and here's one example of where this can get tense really quickly. Because what he probably means is, let's say these Russian relatives aren't observant, as sadly was true of many, many people who came out of Russia because of the struggles in the Soviet Union. It was tremendously difficult to maintain one's connection to Judaism, one's education in Judaism, and the people like Natan Sharansky, the heroes of the Soviet Jewry movement of the 70s, Rav Yosef Mendelevich, and some of them became very frum people, and afterwards they became somewhat frum, but they were people who had to re-educate themselves. There were many dedicated teachers from America and elsewhere, and Israel, and also I know that Rabbi Rakefet went a bunch of times. I think Professor David Berger of YU went a bunch of times. There were and many Lubavitchers, Chabad was very into that. There were many people who risked a lot, because the Soviet Union wasn't happy about it, who risked, Rabbi Riskin I know went a bunch of times, went to Russia and educated people and set up yeshiva, and they tried to bring them back. But there were many, many Russians who really basically knew nothing. So if these, in 1981, if these people came out on the 12th of Sivan, when the people were asking the question to answer on the 12th of Sivan, if they came out and they're not observant, and therefore they're in some sense not good Jews. Now, we today, I think many people would just quickly say, oh, that, you know, go to Shabbos, they're not responsible for what they do or don't do, and therefore they don't qualify as evildoers. It's an argument, so if somebody wanted to say, and that's why I'm willing to be buried near them, even though ordinarily we don't bury near evildoers, near righteous people, it's an argument to be made. But Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying he thinks that the people in the surrounding area do have the right to have that complaint about it, of not wanting to have a Rasha be buried near a Tzaddik, to have an evildoer be buried near a righteous person. So they can make that. So all they can do, though, is, he says, is they can ask or demand of the relatives an agreement in writing. And Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks the truth is, even if they don't give it in writing, they could later on, should one of those relatives pass away, want to be buried there, they could make a fuss about it, because they could say, you know, you can't bury that evildoer that near me, but he thinks it should be gotten in writing that they commit to not being buried there. Now you see why that, if you really try to stick to that, how that becomes very problematic very quickly, because people will say, I'm at the worst an ordinary person. You're calling me, you're calling my relative an evildoer? So it's a very problematic situation. How you would deal with that, I'm not sure. Especially in a world where many people are sadly not observant, you can easily imagine somebody else saying, I don't want to be buried near that non-observant person because he's an evildoer. And we have the tradition, you don't bury evildoers near the righteous. I'm not talking about how to do that. Rav Moshe Feinstein's solution in this case was, he held that the relatives, that the people buried nearby this relative did in fact have the right to make to lodge a complaint and to want to prevent evildoer relatives from being buried there. And by which I think he means non-observant, even though we would most ordinarily think them as Tinoko Chenishbu, as not being fully liable for their lack of observance. Then he was asked if they made the right move. Should they have taken him out, taken this relative out of his grave and cremated him to move him to a place where he'd be buried near Jews, and they knew they couldn't do it without the cremation. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, the obligation to bury people is a Torah obligation. There's a pasuk of the Torah that says, Ki kavor tik berenu, dorin kof aleph kof gimel. You have to make sure to bury. This is talking about a person who was put to death by a court and he was put to death and then hanged as an example to everybody else. But the answer is you're not allowed to leave him up there. You have to bury them. Ki kavor tik berenu. And then we all assume, halacha assumes, that if that's true of him, it's true of everybody, and you have to bury people. So that's a halacha daraita. But then, the problem with being buried near non-Jews, which this man was back in Russia, is also a Torah problem. How do you know it's a Torah problem? So he says it's a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, which is not quite the same as a Torah problem, but he's fundamentally equating them. Halacha l'moshe m'sinai is that you used to have two batei kvarot for a court, as I said before, in terms of, and it's more in Sanhedrin, Mem Zayin Amin Aleph, in terms of people who were put to death by the Beit Din. And the reason for that is that you don't bury evildoers near the righteous people, even lower-level evildoers next to higher-level evildoers. So it might seem like, well, then it's an even thing. You're going to have to violate, you're going to have to stay in violation of one Torah principle either way. Either you're going to leave the relative in Russia buried near non-Jews who are assumed to be evildoers, and that would violate that principle, or you're going to exhume the body and then burn it, and then you're not going to ever bury it. But he says, no, he thinks the burial is better, even though it's near non-Jews. Why? Because he says burial is considered to be a kapara, an atonement for one's sins, and I think, and he says being buried near a Russia or a non-Jew doesn't take away from the kapara. You might have thought it was more kapara, but doesn't take away from the kapara, from the atonement. And the prohibition against burying near a non-Jew, he thinks, is just a regular prohibition. It's in terms of his honor. It's just not it's not that you're not allowed to do it because it's halachically problematic. It's that you're not supposed to do it because it's a disgrace to the person being buried there. So the person's already been buried there, then you might just leave him there and think that he's getting kapara. Notice that Moshe Feinstein seems to think the kapara that comes from burial, the atonement we get through burial, continues even after the full decomposition of the body, because he's talking here about a person who's been buried there for while, and now that the family's leaving, they wanted to exhume the body and take it with them, and yet Rav Moshe Feinstein still thinks the kapara, the atonement, is going. And he throws in, you might have thought that burning the body is even more of a bizarre, more of a disgrace to the body, because it's being dealt with in a way that halachically is supposed to be dealt with, but he says, but the people involved didn't think of it as a bizarre. When we say there's a kapara, there's atonement done for a person who passed away, if the body, this is not a justification for mistreating bodies, but the halacha is just if mistreatment happens to a body, that's taking the sign that that's extra kapara for that person, and they've gotten more kapara, like the burial itself. So, but if they don't think of it as a bizayon, if the people involved in it think that they're treating the body respectfully, that doesn't count, and that will not provide any kind of extra kapara. So he thinks that fundamentally they probably shouldn't have done what they did. They shouldn't have taken the body. They should have left him there, and he was buried already, and he was getting kapara, even if it was near non-Jews, and especially since sometimes it happened in Russia, even in Soviet communist Russia, it happened that you ended up being buried near a Jew, and even though it's a non-Jewish cemetery in the sense that the cemetery as a whole is owned by non-Jews, but it could be that there was a section, especially they buried people by families, where you just happened to be buried near all Jews, and they were all roughly the same level of observance, same level of righteousness, so you shouldn't have taken the body out. But they made a mistake. They didn't know, right? And they didn't have anybody to ask, and they did it. They thought they were trying to honor the person, and so certainly, if it's like an ordinary person, let's say it wasn't a relative, and they were just leaving and they thought they had an opportunity to sort of help a fellow Jew, even though not a non-relative, to get out, so they took him out. So that's a chet b'shogeg. It would be a sin, and it would be a sin done unwittingly that needs a kapara, that needs atonement. An important side note we come across a bunch of times that in halacha, a lot of people forget this. You do something unwittingly. You didn't realize that you were doing what you were doing when you did it. I mean, you didn't realize the full halakhic ramifications of what you do when you did it. It needs atonement. It's not nearly as bad as having done it on purpose or rebelliously or against Hashem. It's got none of that negative quality to it, but it needs atonement. So he says that would be true here. If it was a non-relative, that would be true. But if it's a parent, as it seems to have been, so there's an obligation of honor. And being involved in the needs of a deceased parent, that's part of the obligation of kibbutz avayim, honoring a parent. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein suggests that maybe they don't even need a kapara. Because since they thought they were honoring the parent, right? So what they thought is an important factor here, and they fought it for a legitimate reason, not a correct reason, but a legitimate reason, which is that everybody around them thinks of it that way. It's just understood in the world mistakenly from a halachic perspective, but nonetheless meaningfully from a halachic perspective. It's thought in the world that cremating this parent to take them with them was a higher form of honor. If that's true, Rav Moshe Feinstein applies a halachic principle from elsewhere that I think is a very, very interesting halachic principle, which is with ta'alas bidvar mitzvah, that you made a mistake about a mitzvah, and he ended up violating the Torah in a very serious way. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yehoshua and the Gemara thinks that you are not liable for the avera that you did. So this is a Rambam Hilchot Shgago, second chapter, eighth halacha, that anybody who does a mitzvah, and while he was doing it, a sin happened, a sin that was obligated, that would obligate somebody in karet, and they did it without realizing what they were doing. They're patur. Normally, if you do a karet, if somebody does a karet prohibition, unwittingly they have to bring a korban chatat, they have to bring a chatat sacrifice. But the Rambam paskins, the person wouldn't have to do so in this case because they did it birashut. What does that mean, birashut? They had the permission of halacha because they thought they were doing a mitzvah and they intended to do a mitzvah. So, for an example, would be, these are wild examples. Somebody's about to perform leveret marriage, meaning marrying a former sister-in-law. Brother passed away without children, very sadly. Halacha is, and actually, I was just looking today for two Ravai Yosef's about Yibum, but about they want to get married this way. And so the man gets married. The way you get married for Yibum is you sort of consummate the marriage, and that's the marriage. And it turns out she's a Nida, and he didn't know. So we say he doesn't have to bring a chatat because he thought he was doing a mitzvah, he intended to do a mitzvah, to marry her and perform Yibum, and they didn't know each other well enough for him to ask her. It wasn't the kind of thing. Since he doesn't know her well enough to ask her, the fact that they didn't manage to communicate to each other that she's a nita and they can't this, however that would happen today, I'm not sure. But that's the halakha the Rambam has it. So too, an easier halakha to understand. Let's say I have two children. There are two boys who need to have a brit milah. A father has two sons to have a brit milah. One's brit milah is supposed to be on Shabbos. The other one's supposed to be on Friday. Or one is supposed to be on Sunday. That's a debate in the Gemara. Rambam talks both ways. And the father does both of them on Shabbos. So one of them he certainly wasn't supposed to do on Shabbos because it wasn't the right time for that one to be done on Shabbos. And for the Sunday one, it wasn't even the time to do the bris milah at all. So that's a whole discussion of its own. I'm not getting into it, but he says you're putzer from a chatat. You don't have to give a korban because you had the right to do a bris milah on one of them. And Shabbos was pushed aside for that. When he did both, he thought he was doing the right thing. And when you think you're doing the right thing and you unwittingly do a violation, the Rambam thinks that you're not obligated to bring a chatat. And Rav Moshe says, not only in terms of sacrifice, we don't have sacrifice today, it's also true in terms of the extent to which somebody has to feel the obligation to serve to Hashem and beg for atonement and absolution and a wiping away of the slate, that if these are children, they're not going to need to ask Hashem for mechila and do tshuva for it because they were doing an act of kibbut avayim, whereas others would be required to because the honor that others owe to just ordinary deceased is not good enough to get them out of the problem that they did this, even though they did it unwittingly, unrealizingly. And that is some of the ideas Moshe Feinstein had on the 12th of Sivan of 1981 for what to do with people who cremated a body, thinking it was better bringing it out, bringing up many interesting issues about the definition of good and bad, and the definition of kibbut avayim, what constitutes honoring a parent, the extent to which we take ideas from the outside world in terms of defining our religious practice, and the extent to which our unwitting acts count as sins or don't count as sins, all this and more is within this great Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein for the 12th of Sivan, with thanks to Leo Yu, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hochhauser for putting the Shirim online. I wish you a good day.